Right. Welcome, everybody. Let me check the audio. Okay, great. That's good. I was saying to Travers before we got started that there's a few little artifacts left from last week's episode that we did with AWS.
Right.
And I wanted to make sure that all of this is good. So welcome, everybody, to episode 19 of Talking Cloud. You're stuck with just Travers and I today.
That's right. Back
no
to the usual
guests.
Programming.
Yeah, you got it. You got it. All right. So
a very normal episode.
A very normal episode. So Travers, let's kick us off with the movie recommendations of the week. Anything you're watching or that we should watch for the weekend?
So recently we watched the He-Man Masters of the Universe movie from, was this from 1987, which is a terrible movie, but also an amazing movie at the same time. So if you're into that, I'd highly recommend it.
There you go. Awesome. You know what? I hate to admit it. I don't know if I necessarily have a recommendation for this week.
Oh, no.
Yeah. You know, you and I were talking earlier today and it's kind of like, I don't know where this week has gone. So let's see. I can tell you two things that we watched. We watched the latest season of the Great British Bake Off.
Oh, great.
Which we love. I can't help myself. So we watched that, which if you're into, you know, baking shows, I think it's one of the best ones. And the host, I think his name is Noel something. He used to be on an old, actually, here's two recommendations. He used to be the mainframe computer operator in a show called The IT Crowd. He's like pasty white. And he never comes out of the back room. So it's hilarious. He's kind of like vampire-ish. And then he's also now in new Apple TV, I think it is. It's called The Totally Made Up Adventures of somebody. Can't remember the name. And it's like... Noel Fielding, yeah. And it's The Totally Made Up Adventures of Dick Turpin. And it is a ridiculous show. But it is so fun. We were really disappointed. I think it's only 6 episodes.
Yeah.
And like he's a highwayman, like a robber from like, you know, whenever highwaymen existed.
Right.
But he's into fashion and stuff. And it's hilarious. So if you like Noel Fielding, IT Crowd is a thing to watch. I don't know how many seasons that is. And you can check out the Totally Made Up Adventures of Dick Turpin. There you go. So I actually had some recommendations.
Awesome. Yeah,
I didn't even know it. Fun stuff. All right, so let's get into why we're actually here.
Yes,
there are a number of AWS updates that I think are really interesting.
Specifically for Q.
Yeah, for Q. But sorry, before I do that, I'll put in the show notes. This is where, you know, remember we were talking about having a little script, a little bit of an outline. This would be handy because I want to plug what we did last week with AWS, and I'll put it in the show notes.
Oh, sure.
But last week, if you weren't here, you can find this on our website too. We did an episode with two subject matter experts from AWS, Deborshi Chowdhury and Gerardo Vasquez. And we spent the whole 45 minutes just talking about Gen AI. So like I said, I'll put it in the show notes. It's well worth the watch. Lots of really good info in there. So
good conversation, discussion about Gen AI and AWS's current stance on it, that kind of stuff. So
yeah,
worth watching.
Yeah, definitely worth watching. We're maybe a little biased. I would say it's...
I think so,
right? What's the worst that could happen? You're going to learn something new, right?
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. And you'll get a movie recommendation or two as well.
That's true.
Which, even if you just come for the movie recommendations, we're glad you're here. All right, so enough tomfoolery. Let's talk about the AWS updates from the week. And as you said, lots of updates around Q.
Yes.
Which I'm really excited about. We did a series already, and I'll put this in the show notes as well. Shameless self-plug alert here. Is that what you say? But anyway, shameless plug alert. There we go. Wow, I'm all tongue-tied. We did a series of YouTube Twitch streams when Amazon announced Q back at, I think, reInvent, and it's been in preview ever since. So we built out a solution using Q Business. Which, you know, again, maybe a little biased, but I think it's a really cool solution. And I'm really interested to see where AWS takes this. So now the Q Business, what we did in our stream, is GA. So that's kind of what this announcement is all about.
Right. And that has a whole bunch of implications, especially for the other AI services, but let's go through.
Yeah, I think the thing that I thought was interesting about this is so they mixed sort of two announcements together. So they said, hey, Amazon Q for Business or Amazon Q Business is now GA, but also guess what? There's now Q Apps, which is in preview. And my understanding of Q Apps is that you can literally use text, like basically describe what it is that you want. And Amazon Q Apps will go off and build that application based off of, there you go, this is the phrase I was looking for, natural language.
Natural language, yeah.
Yeah. So I haven't tried this yet, but it sort of feels to me like, and I don't know what it's called on the ChatGPT side, but you know how you can create your own custom GPTs in ChatGPT?
Yeah.
I actually did it just in ChatGPT just to see what it was like. And it, just based on the announcement here, I kind of think it's the same. Like literally in ChatGPT, it asked me a bunch of questions and I kind of was like, yeah, I want this, I want that. And here's your GPT all ready to go. So I'm going to suspect here, I think it's a pretty fair assessment fair assessment to say that Amazon Q Apps is probably very similar to ChatGPT and those custom GPTs. You can build everything in control
language. I think so.
It's pretty cool.
You know what this kind of sounds like? I don't know if this went in our doc this week, but GitHub just released, I totally forgot about this until just now, their workspaces for Copilot. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a Devin Light situation, like a midpoint between that and regular chat, where you go and you give it the description for what you want for the app, and it produces a plan that you can edit. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like they're all kind of converging on some sort of solution like that.
Yeah, and I think you said something really interesting there, that you used the term agent, right? And I kind of think that, again, all of this stuff is going to sort of this agent type based solution where you can define these different types of agents that are good at doing certain things, and then you task those agents to do work for you. And you mentioned Devin, right? And I think sort of Devin was the thing that, I know this concept of agents has been around for a long time, but I know for me personally, when they announced Devin, and I know it gets sort of mixed reviews depending on how you feel about it.
There's some controversy now.
Yeah. But, you know, that, I think, in my opinion, sort of brought this concept of an agent, sort of people started talking about it. And I kind of think all of these things are converging to sort of this sort of agent-based solution.
Yeah, that's what it looks like.
So that's Q. Q Business is now generally available, and Q Apps is now in preview. So there's our first of many Q updates here.
Many Q. There's one or two more for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, one more thing I'll mention is you'll notice right here, Amazon Q Business seamlessly connects over 40 popular enterprise systems, including blah, 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 blah. And
right. Okay. So that's how they're handling building the actual.
Yeah. So when we did the little walkthrough.
Applications, it's kind of gluing.
Yeah. You kind of glue your own data sources to it. And the other really interesting thing about it is they're called connectors or something like that. And they have, I'm going to use the word identity connector. So you can also sort of use access rights and permissions to decide who can see what. So you can connect it to your Jira channel, your Slack channel, those kinds of things. And you can sort of govern what people can see based on their permissions.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know how much of that you heard, but that's Q. Right. Then we now have Q Developer. And this is a generative AI powered assistant that reimagines your experience across the entire software development lifecycle. One of the things that I found about these announcements is all this is really cool, but I find it now very confusing to know is Q Developer what we used to call Code Whisperer?
Right.
Like, is Code Whisperer gone now? How do I know what to select? I find sort of some of the the options here confusing as to what I should be using.
Yeah, it seems like Q is starting to kind of consume the other AI and developer tools.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe this is just stage one of sort of a rebranding of it all. So maybe Q sort of is going to end up with its own flavors. You know, but what do we have here? We have Q developer, we've got Q apps, we've got Q business. So maybe they're kind of trying to reorganize it all into sort of that Q umbrella.
Yeah, I can see that. Just use that as the flagship brand.
But again, we were talking about, you'll notice here, Q developer also includes, and this is again where it gets confusing, Q developer also includes Q developer agent. So, okay, so there's another reference to an agent, which we just talked about, but also again, we almost need a flow chart. This is what we should build the Amazon Q for dummies. And it's just a mind map that says, this is everything that exists under Q and maybe where you would want to use it. I find it confusing to understand kind of what are these different products for, but I like the idea of it. And I shared with you in Slack the other day, yesterday evening, I think. I was in, PyCharm is my thing, right? So I was in PyCharm and I had what I used to call Code Whisperer, which I guess now is Amazon Q Developer.
Right.
So I was authenticated and we pay for the full Q Developer. Okay. So I don't know, again, I don't know the differences between free and paid. I'm sure there's a nice table somewhere that lays all this out. But I was even getting in CloudFormation Code suggestions, and they had a name for it. It was like, hey, you know what? You're creating an S3 bucket, but you don't have this block public access code in the snippet. Didn't apply to what I was doing because I actually wanted the bucket to be public. But I thought that was really cool, like little, almost like I'll call it a tooltip popped right up.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's almost like a guardrail in your IDE, kind of checking for common misconfigurations that you might run into, because you can see that a lot with S3 buckets. If someone's not paying attention, you deploy it. I mean, I think private is the default, but you might say, oh yeah, I kind of want it public to be able to access it. And then,
Well, for my use case, like what I was working on was the S3 bucket that hosts our website.
And
I guess does it really, here's a real question. Does it need to be public though? Because I've actually got CloudFront in front of it. So you can't actually talk to that bucket. You got to go through CloudFront. So maybe I could make it private, but then allow, what's it called? The OAC, the origin access control or whatever. So basically say CloudFront.
CloudFront to access
and talk
the bucket,
to the S3 bucket. It doesn't really need to be public anymore. I don't know, to be honest.
That's definitely the more secure way to do it, if you can avoid putting it out on the internet. We'll see later on. Spoiler, but there's an article about public S3 buckets. That's quite interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so there's another Q offering. And Amazon Q launches subscription management with AWS IAM Identity Center.
Okay, so is this for allowing access to Q for your Identity Center users? Okay.
Yeah, and look at again, Q Business Pro, Q Business Lite, Q Business Developer Pro. Wow. So essentially, the way I read this was that now, to your point, we can manage all of our subscriptions for Amazon Q through Identity Center. And it sounded like it was very similar to, you know how if you're using Identity Center to talk to third-party solutions and stuff like that, you essentially have a dashboard there where you can manage your users in your Identity Center and what they have access to and what versions of Amazon Q do they have access to.
Gotcha.
Different subscription levels and stuff like that. So that's another. Yeah. Yeah. So down here, with Amazon Q subscription management portal, administrators can subscribe users to different plans.
Then we'll see a Q FAQ. FAQQ?
An FAQQ. Yeah, there you go. I definitely think I should actually sit down and draw the little mind map or something of what is Q. Because I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts here. So believe it or not, that's all of the queue updates. Anything else we want to talk about with queue before we move on?
No, I think it's it. That's pretty much it, right? They're kind of moving away from individual AI services for coding for developers and bundling it all under the queue umbrella, like you said. So
yeah, and just take your time with it. Two things that I would say that are sort of the thing I say in every one of these episodes. First off, use these tools, right? Because they are the future. Whether you think the information that it's giving you back is high quality or not, I know it could probably endlessly debate that, but I think it's important that you're familiar with them, you're comfortable with them, you know how to use them, because this is where this is going. So I would say, just like I've said before in a couple of the previous streams, is I think of this as sort of my companion now in my workday. I have Queue open all the time. I'm asking it questions. It's a great way to practice your prompt engineering and get comfortable with it. So use it. And then the other thing I was going to say about this was something really, really, you know, important. And I, make sure you understand the implications on your bill.
Right? Yeah.
Because again, just like we said, there's lots of different subscription options here. Obviously, the worst types of conversations that you have come around the bill at the end of the month. So you want to make sure you understand them before you start adding things and get smacked with a bill that you didn't expect. So just be careful with it.
Right.
All right. So this is a nice little quality of life update that we've talked about all the time. And it actually makes a lot of sense when you think about the fact that you now have to pay for public IP addresses. Amazon now allows you to remove or add auto-assigned public IPs to your EC2 instances, which you couldn't do before.
Right. You were kind of stuck with it unless you did some finagling, recreate the instance.
You took the words out of my mouth. I thought the only way, if you assigned a public IP address to an EC2 instance, the only way you could actually ever get rid of the public IP address again is to terminate it.
Right. Because I don't think you can change that default network interface, right?
No, which I guess the public IP address would then be associated to that ENI that comes with it.
So this is good. That's good. I mean, if you have a fleet of EC2 instances just sitting in a public subnet and you're not using them publicly, then you should definitely, this could help you, you know, save some cash on those IPs. So that's great.
And also become more secure.
Yes.
Right. How many times have we do a lot of audits for people reviewing their accounts. How many times do those reports go back and say, you have X number of EC2 instances sitting in a public subnet with public IPs? You should look at those and determine whether that's actually necessary or not. So you've got cost savings and improved security here by just removing the ability for those things to be talked to over the public internet. So I think this is good.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Good change.
Yeah, good change. I know most people will probably look at this and we would probably debate more the fact on is it an AMI or an AMI? But I like this. and just so you know, it's an AMI. It's not an AMI. It's an AMI.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's an acronym. Let's not turn it into a word. But I thought this was good again. This is another thing. Here's another great example of what we run into all the time. Is you go and you run a report for somebody and you're like, you have 52 AMIs. You should probably clean those up if you're not using them. And a lot of times, you know, institutional knowledge is in people's heads and it leaves because it's not well documented. And then you're kind of like, well, which of these AMIs could we clean up? So now you can very easily see by running a describe command when you're AMI was last used to run or launch an EC2 instance. So that's handy.
This is awesome. I've actually written scripts before where I've had to cross-reference AMIs, what images are, volume images are associated with those, what snapshots, are they related to active volumes? And that's how you can kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
But this makes it a whole lot simpler.
Right? And this is a great example of quality of life updates. And it says right here in the first paragraph, right? Prior to today, you had to write complex scripts to query which of your AMIs were actively being used. This is fantastic. I'm going to add to the AWS wish list on this one. because I had a customer ask us this just the other day. How do I know when the last time a Cloud9 instance was used? That was my response. I was like, geez, you know what? Nobody's ever asked me that before. It's one of the reasons why I love this is you always get these questions. You're like, yeah, okay. I should probably figure that out. As far as I know, there's no way to tell. Like it's an EC2 instance. So you've got to go back in those EC2 instances and look at that. But I couldn't find a way through an API call, right? There's definitely, as far as I know, there's nothing in Cloud9 that allows you to do that. So you got to make an API call to an EC2 instance. The problem in this particular case was very large fleet of Cloud9 or EC2 instances that were running Cloud9 that had been there for extended periods of time. And one of the suggestions was, look for the particular API calls in CloudTrail.
That's what I was just thinking is one way you could possibly do it.
Yeah, right. But the longer in the past that API call was made, the more challenging it gets to find them, depending on what you have set up to do with those CloudTrail logs. But this release sort of reminded me of that because I was stuck in that last week. So there's a wish list is let's do the same thing now for EC2 instances that are launched by Cloud9. Or maybe somebody knows how to do this, that it's either with us today on the stream or sees it later. Maybe somebody else could chime in and tell us that there is a way to do that. You just go here, which would be awesome too.
Yeah. Some things that come to mind are maybe Cloud9 has like a logging function, or you can look at metrics perhaps, but,
And you know what? I'm sure by now it's pretty clear how much of a fan I am of Queue, but this goes back to the other thing I say all the time, trust but verify. I asked Queue and it did a pretty good job hallucinating. It was telling me I can't think of it exactly now, right?
And it should have generated that text for you.
It did some interesting things, right? It's like, you just look at this value when you run the CLI command. I'm like, nope, that doesn't exist. So trust but verify, as I say often. So that's that one. And then we've got one more again.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Well, this is probably why they implemented that information change for the AMIs, right?
Yeah.
So Amazon EC2 now protects your AMIs from accidental deregistration, probably using the tooling we just talked about for which AMIs are actually in use.
Yeah. And you know what? I did this actually today, and this is really cool here. See at the bottom, to further guard your environments, you can optionally enable a 24-hour cooldown period during which a protected AMI still can't be deregistered, even though you've disabled protection on the AMI. So you have that.
Gotcha.
It's almost like I call this the "Are you sure?" window, right? Like, do you really want to do that? Be sure. I use this today because we're in the process of importing some custom images for a workspaces environment for a customer, and we're doing some testing, right? And I thought to myself, I'm like, okay, I've got a couple images on the fly here. I want to make sure that either I don't accidentally delete the AMI that I actually want, right? And I'm sure there's a better way to do it. When I was running the VM import commands, I was doing pretty bare bones. So I wasn't tagging anything because I was just testing some stuff, but I got confused pretty quickly. And this came out. And this morning I was like, this is the AMI that I want to make sure. If I'm cleaning up after myself here because I'm doing some troubleshooting and stuff, this one I don't delete. Do not touch this one. So I didn't do the cooldown period. I didn't get really fancy, but I at least this way, I figure I have that "are you sure" moment that just protects myself from myself, which is always handy.
Yeah.
So there you go. Those are the interesting AWS updates from roughly the last week, I guess.
Roughly this week.
Yeah. So we talked about breaking the podcast into more structured segments and having a little bit of an outline. I'm going to blame it on the fact that it felt like I was doing a little bit of time traveling this week, but now envision, for those of you that are old enough and maybe Canadian, envision SCTV. Okay. We're changing gears and we're going to the Gen AI portion of the show. Okay. There's our fancy transition screen. It was.
Wow.
It was the highlight of my week. So here's the first article for Gen AI is from Ethan Mollick. We've talked about Ethan a couple times on the show. Great book if you're looking to learn about this, right? Again, I forget every week the book is called, but check it out. You can just throw this into Amazon and find it. But I thought this was interesting. It caught my attention because a couple weeks ago, I think we were kind of, you know, saying, should we really be calling this chatbots anymore? Because it's not really a chatbot, right? So this article is kind of about, right, this idea of, you can see first sentence, for the first last year and a half, the primary way most people have experienced LLMs have been chatbots. And he kind of goes on to talk about the fact that chatbots aren't going away, but increasingly we got to figure out some other way to talk to these AIs. So I thought this was interesting. He talks about some of the AI devices that he's personally using. Probably if you're reading about Gen AI news at all, the device that's down in the bottom left here that's very brightly colored, you probably read about, I think it's called an R1.
The Rapid, eh?
Yeah, and I don't... Have you read about this? Have you seen anything about this?
I did see some interesting stuff about this week in particular.
What do you think?
It's fine. It's something. It seems like a low-powered mobile phone to me, but...
Yeah.
You know.
You're kind of like... my take on this was I would sum my reading up on it as meh, right? Like,
yeah,
neat little gadget. But am I ever going to find any real value in this thing? And I think the internet's kind of fallen that same thing, right? You either think this is the best thing that's ever been created. How did I live before this? Or whatever. So he kind of talks about some of these devices that he's been using, all great. And then if we scroll down, so that first part caught my idea, right? These are kind of like, not really reviews, but he's just kind of talking about why some of these devices are interesting, why some of them are meh.
Right.
But here,
I mean,
oh, go ahead.
It's kind of interesting in that it's a translation layer between voice to text for these models, right? Which we're traditionally, or so far, mostly interacting with over exclusively text or chatbot-based systems.
Yeah.
So.
I think the way that I kind of thought about it was the fact that you could take your AI with you into the real world versus just you're sitting at your desk, you've got the little chat window, you type to it. You know, with some of these devices, like he talks about the Ray-Ban glasses in here, I think they are, right? The smart glasses. You take this thing out into the world with you. Hey, it's kind of neat. Tell me what this building is, right? And again, hallucination is still a thing, but... You know, if I'd be able to kind of give you some interesting information about the world that's around you. I think there's all sorts of privacy concerns and things like that, but that's for another show.
Well, you just reminded me of another article that, of course, I forgot to put into the show notes this week, but there was a Twitter thread where the guy was, give me a picture and I'll give you a within 20 miles guess of where that is. And it turns out what he was doing was using a geolocation kind of maps trained or system that would do best guess of what the location you took the picture was. And it was kind of scarily accurate. I mean, it was really good for landmarks and stuff like historic buildings. It got no problem, but some people just posted pictures of a field and it was able to get, I think one was in South Africa. It got within 400 miles of it, but
wow. What's the game? Yeah. What's the game? It's called GeoGuessr.
Oh, GeoGuessr. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a bunch of GeoGuessers playing together.
Oh, yeah.
You take everything with a bit of a grain of salt, but at least what they were showing in the videos, I was amazed. Forget AI. Get it? I'm like, how did they possibly know that picture is New Zealand? And the folks that were playing, like, they're surprisingly close. Like, how the hell do you know that? It's crazy.
It's a really interesting metagame. You have to know plant species. You have to know license plates, road signs, that kind of stuff. Crazy. Paving construction techniques. So, yeah.
Yeah. pretty cool. So I think this is pretty neat, but what really caught my eye on this was, again, something that we've talked about, this, you know, co-pilots, agents, things here sort of that you are going to use as part of your day-to-day work. And so, you know, kind of what grabbed my attention on this is sort of just because it sort of fit into the conversations we were having a couple weeks ago about this idea of,
right,
is it really a chatbot? And then sort of, as we talked about already today, this concept of increasingly people thinking about creating agents to sort of then task with what it is that they're wanting to do, right? Or maybe even having multiple agents work together. So interesting article. I'll definitely make sure that I put this one in the show notes for the week. It's worth a read. Oh, and there's Devin back again. Love it or hate it, Devin's here.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of people posting that Devin looks like a very good way to get VC money, but not so great in terms of actual tooling.
And what can you give me like a little more context?
Like it looks really attractive, but it's not super effective at what it does based on what people are posting. But.
Well, you know, and this goes back to what Ethan has said in his book, is that like, always remember that the AI that you're using right now is the worst AI you'll ever use.
Yeah.
It's only ever going to get better, right? And this goes back to kind of what I mentioned at the beginning of the show. Like, this is why I think it's, whether you find this valuable or not, I think there's a lot of value in being comfortable and understanding how some of these things, how you could use them in your day-to-day work.
Oh, sure.
Make sure you verify it, right?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm gonna change the order because of what I just said. We'll come back to the Anthropic thing in a second. This is the second article that I saw this week about because, and again, you know what I find as we've done more and more of these shows, I'm finding articles that relate to things we talked about in a previous episode. So I think it was, if we're doing our math right, episode 17. So before we had AWS on the show, we talked about a university using AI as part of their drug development process for, I think it was Parkinson's, remember?
Yeah.
And you've brought multiple articles here just saying one of the biggest benefits of AI could potentially be the reduction in costs and the reduction in time it takes to get obviously really important things to market for people's health and wellness. So this is kind of along a theme that we've talked about a couple times, and the headline alone, right? Scientists can't stop using AI to write research papers. And they've got some pretty crazy stats in here. And it also reminded me of something else. We look at this. Both papers looked for certain words that large language models use habitually, such as intricate, pivotal, meticulously. Delve is the one that we kind of make fun of quite a lot.
Yeah.
And they use these sort of keywords to sort of decide whether or not AI had written the paper. And you can see here, so they looked over a 4-year period, okay? And you'll notice here, words meticulous, commendable, intricate rose by 59%, 83%. So they're basically sort of extrapolating the fact of the use of these words may be an indication that AI has been used to write the paper.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting metric, right?
Yeah. Kind of scary, right? If they're, we've talked about lawyers who've run into problems using AI in the past, right? You'd want to be very careful with this, right? And oh, up here, look at this. A second paper published in April by Stanford team in the U.S. claimed the figure might range from 6% to 17.5% in the sense that, again, Gen AI writing this content for you. So
interesting.
Yeah.
I wonder how. So, I mean, the other thing is, too, that a lot of the way these models speak about this, about scientific topics, is probably because they were trained on scientific papers, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of overlap there as well. But
yeah.
I can certainly see scientists wanting to write like the intro, the abstract of their papers and whatnot.
Yeah.
Maybe you just give it the theme.
Yeah.
Go from there, the beta. But
it's, I think that, you know, other than the fact that this was kind of scary isn't the right word, but just to think about the fact that, you know, the importance of the importance that's tied to some of this research, and then to think that it's being farmed out to AI, either wholly or in part, is, could be a little concerning. But the other thing I thought about is just the research that's being done to understand that LLMs use these words, right? And then you can use those words to sort of determine whether or not maybe something that has been submitted is largely generated by AI or not. I would see that maybe the word research thing could probably be, a lot of teachers be interested in that too, because I know
absolutely
on the education front there's concerns there too about how much of work being submitted
is being farmed out to OpenAI or whatever, or whoever else.
I built an agent to write all of my grade 12 English essays for the entire year, and I stumbled across something else that was interesting, and I should have made a note of it. I think it was just a Twitter thread, but it was something along the lines of a teacher was also using sort of, obviously nothing scientific about this, but how quickly students were turning in papers as also another indication of how did you do that in 3 nights? I gave you 3 weeks to do it, right? And you're just like, yeah, ChatGPT. I'm using that as an example. I, you know what I mean? So interesting as well. So this kind of goes against, but sort of is the downside of AI and scientific community, and the fact that we talked about all the great use cases for it, but you've also got some things to be careful of here. So this one grabbed my attention.
Especially for, there's some things you want to be mindful of in high importance communications. Like this kind of paper is going to be used by scientists around the world to try and dissect the research you've done. So
There was something that went along with this. Mm. It was like there was a research paper that was published just recently, and they had to like remove it and sort of retract it and say, oops, because other people were reading and saying, hey, this is clearly not, there's something off here. The figures that were in the article were just not right. They even said some of the diagrams that were included with the paper just were off, and people reading it just suspected that something wasn't quite right, and the publication had to retract the article and pull it out. They had done some research and found that Gen AI had been used again for it. So I guess, it's the same old thing, tools that we've had for a long time. People always use them in maybe ways that we hadn't intended, right?
Yeah, and this won't go anywhere anytime soon, too. So we'll see a lot more of this.
Yeah, absolutely. So here's one that you added. So why don't you run us through this? Anthropic launches new iPhone app and premium plan for businesses. Give us the gist of this one.
Right. So, I mean, it's pretty much in the title. So they've released an app for iOS with their flagship cloud model in it. And you can sign up for a business premium plan, which gives you more access to, like, more usage to the model, essentially.
Yeah.
So you get more tokens per spend.
Okay. Yeah.
Two
things jumped out at me on this one. The first thing is, I tried to find an article from a source that I liked or trusted, and I couldn't find it. But I think it was last week or maybe the week before, Tim Cook was kind of hinting at some Gen AI coming from Apple very soon, particularly around their phones. So the first thing that jumped out at me is this like sort of a preemptive strike? Sounds dramatic, maybe. But okay, well, Apple's going to do this, so let's try to get on those phones ahead of them before they say, hey, guess what? It's just built into your phone. So you've got sort of some loyal people using your app already, so why bother changing?
Right.
So that's the first thing that jumped out at me. And the other thing that jumped out at me with this is just the fact that you know, I know it takes a lot to train these models. We've talked about the sizes of the clusters that large organizations like AWS and Meta are building.
Massive.
Right?
Like, compute.
Massive. But you can take the output of that and run it in your pocket.
Yeah. For the smaller models, for sure. And I mean, AI chips are getting better and better, right? So those are going to migrate. I think Llama 3, you can run almost any, like on most devices.
Yeah, don't they call those SLMs, small language models?
Yeah.
We're saying like the potential for those is also probably unrecognized at this point, and the fact that, you know, you can run them anywhere, they're quite capable for a lot of use cases, easier, more cost-effective or less expensive to train. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes out. There was an article about... it was Intel and somebody else. I should have included it now in hindsight as we're talking about this, but they were talking about how Intel and this other, I think it was another chip company, sort of have proved now that you can actually run these models like on a CPU, some type of chip design or whatever. So, you know, I think we've talked about this in the past, like, how long is it going to take so that you have like, just because we're talking about Anthropic here, you've got an Anthropic model on your TV. Like, those days are coming.
Not long.
Like, probably not long.
I was just looking at Llama 8B. It's like 16 gigs of disk space and 20 gigs of VRAM to run in FP16. So that's a mid to high end GPU, basically, consumer. You can run that on.
I guess if you could get the chips, that would be important, but, you know, these things are going to be running on your household appliances in very short order.
Yeah.
So that's an interesting one. And then, this right here, I think is, I always like when we do these shows, I always kind of think, I always pick one article that I kind of walk away from. Day and I'm like, wow, look at that. This to me was the one that sort of really grabbed my attention. So essentially, actually, why don't you summarize it? Because you shared this one.
Sure. Yeah. So the article is called "I Will Never Go Back." Ontario family doctor says new AI note taking saved her job. Essentially, the gist of it is this doctor was extremely overworked. I mean, the Ontario government requires you to file out a lot of admin work for every patient you see. And it was something like 2 hours a day of just admin. But what the tool she was using, I think it was called, in the article. But essentially, you talk out loud during the patient, I don't want to say patient interview, the doctor's visit, the examination. And it records kind of the notes that the doctor's taking. And it summarizes them and kind of pre-fills out the admin forms for you, which is huge. Like she was saying, this was a huge drain on her mental resource. She was considering quitting if she didn't find a solution.
Yeah. So, the idea...
AI scribe.
Yeah. And this again goes to the difference, like the different ways that we're going to interact with these models. Well, I was going to say in the near future, but it's already happening. This goes to the theme of sort of chatbots that we talked about before. It's great to sit and type. Okay. That's one thing. Now you're using your voice, right? It's an easy interface. And we've tested out these tools on our own team meetings and stuff. Haven't found one that we really like, but the idea that you've got that AI in the meeting with you,
summarizing everything,
creating to-do lists for you. I think the big challenge that we had with that is we've already got all these tools where we track work on. Now I've got another tool. How do I get the work from this tool into the one we've all decided to use and using for years? We don't want to switch. But this article and the fact that the doctor is able to, like you said, just as they're talking, recording what they're talking about, transcribing it all of and filling out some of that work for them, I think is huge, right? This is
massively
important,
especially in the medical field where we are in Ontario right now. Any kind of assistance we can give these people. Oh, hello.
Hello. That's supposed to be somewhere in 10
minutes. A cameo.
Yeah. Alexa. Stop. Oh, there we go. I'd be lost without the Echo calendar reminder. Keeps me in line where I'm supposed to be every day. Sorry, go ahead.
But yeah, I was just saying, there's such a demand on the medical sector right now that any efficiency gain, any help that the doctors can get for this kind of reducing this kind of admin work and being able to do more of the thing they actually want to do, which is doctor work. That's great.
Yeah, that's why they got into this line of work, right?
You want to help people, right? Yeah, you don't want to fill out forms.
No, and I've heard, like, to your point about just sort of the state of healthcare in Ontario right now, it's, you know, not really great. Shortage of doctors doing a lot of things that they can't bill for. So being able to give that doctor their time back to do doctoring, like you said, like that's
valuable time,
not only to keep the doctor in the profession, but also allow them to provide the value back to their customer, the patients, right? Like this to me is a great example of how AI could really help just benefit society in general. So this is the article, this really grabbed my attention. So very cool find. So that's the show. Any sort of housekeeping to take care of?
There's the webinar coming up you wanted to talk about, I think.
Yes, there is the webinar coming up. So at the end of the month, May 30th, we are going to do a intro to Gen AI on AWS. Every week I use a different title because I'm working on the slides and I keep sort of changing my mind on how I want it to be worded. But May 30th, 1 p.m., it's a 100 level. So like if you're a Gen AI expert, you know everything about it, not for you. But if you're like most people out there, just interested in learning more about it, this is particularly focused on how do you build Gen AI solutions on AWS. So I'll share a link to that in the show notes as well. And yeah, I think that's it. I don't have any housekeeping on my side.
All right.
Perfect. Well, that's the show, folks. I obviously have to be somewhere. The Echo told me I have to go. So I better listen and be on my way. Yep. So thanks very much for joining us today. That's another episode in the books. We'll be back next Friday. Oh, there is one other housekeeping thing. I restarted I'm just going to call it Tuesday Twitch streams.
Oh, awesome.
I did it in the afternoon last week. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to try to do it again in the afternoon next Tuesday. And we're building out, using Bedrock to build out knowledge bases, and we're using CloudFormation to do that. I'm going to try to it in the afternoon, ideally. But watch for that, too. I'll be posting on LinkedIn and stuff like that, like we normally do. So keep an eye on that. It's part two. So if you wanted to see part one, it's already up in YouTube. I'll put some show notes there. So go. I did actually have some housekeeping. So enjoy your weekend.
Yep,
thanks for watching, folks. Bye.